anything and everything. I play a lot of music from many genres and include a world segment. Join me here each and every Tuesday, 10:30 to 1 p.m. for the Great Wide Open on KPFT.
Want to do radio? KPFT is looking for programmers and board ops. If this sounds like you, contact me, Marlo Blue, at pdkpft@gmail.com or leave a message at 713-526-4000 extension 1003. Hey, KPFT is looking for you.
You are listening to KPFT Houston.
Listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, KPFT.org, the program People of Earth. And also we are at 89.5 in good old Galveston and Huntsville, 91.9. We are up there too. So we're all over the place here in East Texas, Southeast Texas. So People of Earth, People of Earth, it is Indigenous news, views, sometimes music. And my name's Jacqueline Batiste, really grateful to be here on these free airwaves. So right now we're going to go ahead and do some Democracy Now, because Democracy Now with Amy Goodman did all her broadcasting at the COP30, the Conference of Parties, the 30th Annual United Nations Climate Change Conference. And so it's been going on for over a week, and in the Brazilian city of Belém, and maybe 50,000 people or more from 190 countries, including many diplomats, climate experts, and exploiters, have been in attendance at the 11-day event in the Amazon. We're going to start with some of the voices, some of the interviews from Democracy Now! From there.
We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, that's COP30, from the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. The gathering comes 33 years after the Rio Earth Summit, which created the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC. This is Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva.
A Convenção do Clima regressa.
The Climate Convention returns to the country where it was born. Today, the eyes of the world turn to Belém with immense expectation. For the first time in history, a climate COP will take place in the heart of the Amazon. In the global imagination, there is no greater symbol of the environmental cause than the Amazon rainforest.
New data from the Brazilian government shows deforestation of the Amazon has hit an 11-year low. This is Brazil's Environment Minister, Mariana Silva.
We have the commitment to end deforestation by 2030. With this experience, we want to encourage and create mechanisms so that this example is followed. It's about leading by example. Now, those who have more financial resources, more human resources, and more technological resources have the obligation and the responsibility to do more.
That was Brazil's Environment Minister, Marina Silva. While the Brazilian government highlights its work on deforestation, many climate activists have criticized the Lula administration for recently approving new exploratory drilling near the mouth of the Amazon by state-run oil giant Petrobras. Earlier this year, Brazil joined OPEC, the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, Brazil has also faced criticism for cutting through rainforest to build a new four-lane highway. It was built in time for the climate summit here in Belém, though started many years ago. In addition, cruise ships had to be brought into Belém to help house delegates due to a shortage of hotel rooms in this gateway city. We begin today's show with Ilan Zugman. He is a Brazilian climate activist and 350.org's regional head for Latin America and the Caribbean. He is based in southern Brazil. Welcome to Democracy Now! It is great to be in your state here, in your country, Brazil. But if you can talk about what the world should understand about Brazil, a contradictory environmental history and home to the Amazon, the Brazilian rainforest.
Yeah, of course. Well, hello, Amy. Hi, everyone. It's great to be here. And yeah, Brazil is this huge country with many different views. We have the biggest rainforest of the world. We have some very powerful movements, indigenous people, traditional communities. It's one of the biggest democracies of the planet. And in this new government of Lula that was elected about 3 years ago, the government is trying really to improve the climate and environmental situation of the country. We've been able to achieve good results on reducing deforestation across several biomes, including the Amazon, but also in the Cerrado, that's another important biome of the country. Brazil was also able to create the first ever Ministry of Indigenous People. Protection of indigenous lands is increasing in the country. New lands are being demarcated. But where we are going to facing issues in Brazil right now is the part connected with the energy sector, where unfortunately Lula is still pushing for new oil and gas areas in the country, including in the Amazon. A few weeks before the COP30 started, a new license was granted to Petrobras in the river mouth of the Amazon basin to start exploring for new oil and gas in the area, which is, for us, it's super contradictory. The oil industry is the main causer of the climate crisis. If it was not for the oil and gas industry and the coal, we will not be having COPs. These are the guys that are causing climate change. The highest greenhouse emissions come from them. So in order to be a real climate leadership, as Lula is saying, as its government is saying, we don't think it's wise. We don't think we are going to be able to tackle climate change, and Brazil is not going to be able to hit its own climate targets if this exploitation of oil and gas in the offshore of the Amazon goes ahead.
Can you talk about President Lula? Lula's arguing that oil revenues are needed to help finance a green energy transition. Of course, he's been criticized by many for making this comment. André Correa do Lago, president of the COP30, has said, it is easier and cheaper to borrow money to invest in oil projects than in other more sustainable ones. Said the money you gain from exploring oil can be used internally for projects that are good for clean energy transition.
Yeah, sure. Well, this is a narrative that we've been hearing for several years, not only from Brazil, but from many countries around the world. And we don't think that this is going to happen in Brazil. Brazil does not have a clear policy about what needs to be done with the profits from the oil and gas industry. And even though Brazil has been exploiting oil for decades, right? We have the pre-salt basin, that is this huge area in the southeast, offshore exploitation. And an analysis done by an organization called INESC discovered that less than 1% from all of the royalties that are coming from the oil exploitation in Brazil are going to the energy transition. So why now is going to be different? Brazil has not presented yet its own national just energy transition plan. That was a promise from the government. The government is going to its final year. Next year we have presidential elections in Brazil, and we don't see this plan showing what needs to be done with the royalties from the oil industry. So we need to see a clear plan, and then it might help, but we think that investments needs to go to renewable energy and not to the oil industry. Brazil needs to do a reform of the subsidies, because there's millions of subsidies that still goes to oil.
Can you talk more about Petrobras, the state oil company, receiving a license from Lula to conduct exploratory oil drilling off the Amazon, despite the environmental concerns about the project and right in the lead up to COP30?
Yeah, sounds crazy, right? But Petrobras is one of the biggest polluters in the world, is one of the main companies contributing to climate change, given its huge portfolio of oil and gas, not only in Brazil, but also in Africa, for example, and other parts of the world. This specific area called Block 59, it was an area that was first purchased by other companies like British Petroleum and Total, and they tried to get a license for many years from IBAMA, the National Regulation Agency. They could not get the license, and they sold this area to Petrobras. And then Petrobras started this campaign, building pressure in the government. Lula decided to change the president of Petrobras this year to step up the pressure. Politicians from the north of the Amazon also step up their pressure, so this license could be given. And we believe that's a huge mistake. It's a very sensitive area with very important ecosystems. Oil spill in the area could have like terrible impacts for indigenous communities, fishers, quilombolas, riverine communities. It's an area where we have some very important mangroves that are natural nurseries for biodiversity. So exploiting oil and gas there is a really bad idea that's going to damage the ecosystem and also Brazil's reputation as a climate leader.
I wanted to ask you about the Amazon rainforest being the lungs of the planet. It's something that I'm so used to saying for so many years, but the fact is that may be misleading now. National Geographic reports Amazon's net contribution to the oxygen we breathe likely hovers around zero. In 2021, the journal Nature reported the Amazon rainforest is emitting more carbon dioxide than it absorbs, driven by deforestation, fires, and warming temperatures.
Yeah, that's a sad story. The Amazon used to be the lungs of the planet, but given climate change, deforestation, fires, livestock industry.
You mean when you say livestock, cattle farming?
Cattle, exactly, cattle. Many parts of the Amazon are now reaching a tipping point, so a point of no return. There are some areas of the Amazon that are at the risk of becoming savannas, for example, getting drier and drier. So given all of these impacts, the forest is losing its capacity to sequestrate carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases, as it used to be several years ago. So that's a true but sad story, yeah.
I want to ask you about U.S. policy, since U.S. is so important in the world, the historically largest greenhouse gas emitter, and President Trump's relationship with autocratic leaders. People like Bolsonaro, who's now, it looks like, about to go to prison, the former president, often called the Trump of the tropics. But it's interesting how Trump has increased massively tariffs on Brazil unless they free and drop the case against Bolsonaro, who, like Trump, attempted to overthrow the elections in Bolsonaro's case in Brazil and Trump's case in the United States in 2020. So you have Brazil, a major oil producer in the world. He focuses on that. He focuses on Colombia, also a major producer, in Venezuela, as he bombs boat after boat without providing evidence that they are narco-terrorists on these boats. And has just said he wants to attack Nigeria, the largest oil producer in Africa, that the attack would be vicious and sweet. Very unclear what that's about. But if you can talk about Brazil's place in the world as, what is it, the fifth largest oil producing nation, and also the effect of Trump's policies, U.S. policy on Brazil, and what Trump's pushing for.
Of course, yeah. Well, Brazil and U.S. have a very long story of relationships. They are still big partners, economic. There's lots of relationships between the two countries. Of course, with the change of governments in the U.S. in Brazil, right? First we have Biden to Trump, then the opposite happened in Brazil from Bolsonaro to Lula. The relationship now is a bit shaken, but in the last weeks, the relationship is being improving after they had this meeting in the UN summit in September. So the US is reducing now some tariffs in Brazil for some products. But of course, the relationship now with the US, having a climate denier leading the country, we know that the interest is all about money, power, control. So Brazil, as other countries, as you mentioned, in Latin America, also Nigeria, have a huge amount of resources, including oil, but also including the rare earth minerals, the critical minerals so needed for the energy transition. So we know that the U.S. is looking into all of that. And we hope that Brazil can continue to stay firm, negotiate, and do what's best for the country, for the interests of its own citizens, and not cede to the pressure from a climate denier.
Very quickly, what are you hoping to see from this COP30 summit?
For us, we hope to see in this COP a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. That would be the best outcome from this COP, as climate change has been caused by fossil fuels. A roadmap saying how we will transition away from fossil fuels would be the best outcome from this COP. And also, if we get some quality and direct finance, public finance going to the communities more affected by climate change, a deal on that will also be critical for us.
The presence of lobbyists here, more than 1,000, well over.
Yeah, so it's not a surprise for us that this COP has the highest presence ever of fossil fuel lobbyists, 1,600, almost 20% higher than it was in Baku. And it's the second largest delegation of COP30, right? Brazil is the biggest one with about 3,000 people, and the second largest delegation, it's the fossil fuel lobbyists, which is, awful.
Well, I want to thank Ilan Zugman, Brazilian climate activist, 350.org's regional head for Latin America and the Caribbean, based in southern Brazil. Coming up, we speak to a leading indigenous activist from Ecuador. In fact, here at the COP30, despite the major protests against the lobbyists, against the fossil fuel countries leading policymaking, there's also the largest indigenous presence. Stay with us.
Yeah, you're listening to People of Earth here on KPFT 90.1 FM, KPFT.org. So you're listening to sounds from the 30th Annual United Nations Climate Change Conference, the COP30, with a big spotlight on indigenous people, forest, and agriculture. We're going to go back to that right now.
Ka apete peweko wane kone wara ora ruwa he e e wara ora ruwa he e wara ora ruwa he e e wara ora ruwa he e ka ai wara e yo ka ai wara e yo.
A song by the Guajajara people of Brazil performed at the COP30 opening ceremony last week.
And you're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, KPFT.org.
Umanaye,
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit COP30 from the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. I'm Amy Goodman. We're joined now by Kumi Naidoo, the longtime South African human rights and environmental justice activist, former head of Greenpeace International and Amnesty International, now president of the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty Initiative, a global effort to accelerate a transition to renewable energy. It's great to have you back with us, Kumi. It seems that at these UN climate summits, that's kind of the only time we get to talk right now or see each other in person. Can you talk about the significance of this moment when it comes to the climate catastrophe in the world?
So the reality is the science told us in Paris that we need to be below 1.5 degrees. We are already pushing there. We are seeing that there is a big disconnect between the words that political and business leaders say and what actions happen on the ground. So for the last week, let's just have a quick recap what's happened. So one, we see that there's absolute corporate capture here again. There was 1,600 fossil fuel lobbyists. And even though it's a struggle to get the F word said here, but the F word, we mean fossil fuels, it took 28 years before 86% of the primary cause of climate change would be even mentioned in a COP outcome document. That's like Alcoholics Anonymous holding 28 years of conferences before they can get a backbone to mention alcohol, which is the problem. And so that's one challenge. But the big debates right now around finance, we're really stuck on finance. So there's two blocks that have emerged. So China and the G77 are talking about a seriously funded mechanism called the Belém Action Plan, and the EU has put an alternative proposal on the table, which is about basically developing countries are saying this will be another talk shop with no money. So like, if you take the money is really a big issue here, because like you'll remember a couple of years ago we finally got a loss and damage fund set up, right? And the governments have just committed $250 million to this fund when what is needed is $400 billion a year, right? So there's such
and
a
talk
big...
about why you think. I mean, many people in the U.S., certainly Trump himself, the president, would say, why should they be putting money into these countries?
So basically, first and foremost, it's in self-interest, right? That in the end, if developing nations, if the rich nations of the world don't support poor nations to transition and survive, the end result is that there will be growing emissions from the global south, which makes it worse, and more forest fires in California and more intense hurricanes and tornadoes in Florida and elsewhere. But the historical issue is, the facts are clear, that this old process that started 30 years ago said that we should have common and differentiated responsibilities, that all nations need to work together because this challenge is so big. But it also differentiated, is that countries like the US and Europe, who decimated the forests historically, that built the economies on dirty energy, and the historical emissions in the atmosphere are coming from those emissions. It's not to say that developing countries are not rising as well right now, but the historical accumulated responsibility still exists. And so basically, we're not asking the rich nations for a charity year, we are asking them to pay their climate debt. It's about, you know,
Well, I wanted to ask you about the historically number one greenhouse gas emitter, and that's the United States. And also President Trump saying that climate change is a hoax.
I think the position that the U.S. administration is currently taking is not in the interest of the United States and its people. It's not in the interest of the world, and it's not in the interest of global cooperation. However, having said that, let's be blunt about it. U.S. participation at these COPs have often been negative. They have held back progress. They have brought down ambition levels and so on. So the good news, though, is that it's not that U.S. people are not here and are not represented. There are lots of governors that are here. There are lots of cities, mayors that are here. There's civil society here. So you know, Gavin Newsom, for example, had a very prominent role here in the first couple of days. And we would urge the U.S. people to convince the current Republican-led administration to recognize that we need them at the table. But if they're not here, we're going to move ahead as we're doing with the fossil fuel treaty. So Colombia has called for a standalone diplomatic conference in April next year. After Easter, we will move to negotiate this treaty outside of the UN system as the landmine treaty was done, and then we'll bring it into the UN system for ratification. So Global South countries are going to move ahead without the dominant polluters, and people should not assume that the old world order, where what the US and a few rich countries do, can hold everybody back. Ideally, we want the U.S. at the table, but they cannot hold us hostage forever. We're going to try and move ahead without them.
Kumi Naidu, speaking here at COP30 last week, you said, today the leaders of the fossil fuel industry occupy the same moral equivalent position that in a different era controlled the so-called slave industry. Explain what you mean.
Well, the leaders who were trading in human lives in slavery had the same political access to power as the fossil fuel industry has. They had the same ability to control the narrative by what they could spend in the media of that time, as we have the same domination by the fossil fuel industry to confuse people about the urgency of the situation. And basically, ethically, trading in human lives then and now was never morally acceptable. Banking on a energy system that is killing people, that threatens not the planet, let's be clear, the planet will survive. This is threatening humanity's capability to survive on this planet, and people must be clear that this is being done for profit and greed, and that they are being called out now. And thankfully, at this COP, the one progress, and Amy, I think I met you at the Copenhagen COP for the first time in 2009. At that time, remember, you could hardly hear the word fossil fuels. Yeah, certainly on the streets, it's all about the root cause is fossil fuels. We need to turn the tap and stop the flow of fossil fuels. So no longer can they escape what the root cause is. And I think that we will come out here because President Lula, in the first day, said we need a fossil fuel phase-out plan coming out of this. The appetite is not there. We're still pushing. But whether we get it here or not, we certainly will push in April to do so in Colombia.
Kumi, before we go, I want to ask you about two other issues. I mean, you are from South Africa. That's the country that brought the genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. You have always lived at the intersection of human rights, also climate. And you were former head of Amnesty and Greenpeace. If you can comment on what's happening now, I mean, yesterday the UN Security Council approved a U.S.-backed plan for a so-called international stabilization force in Gaza, but you still have the human rights situation where far less than half Israel's letting of humanitarian aid come into Gaza, and people are still being killed and attacked either in Gaza or the occupied West Bank.
My experience from South Africa teaches me that when those with power in context of conflicts speak about stabilization, what they are talking about often is stabilizing injustice, stabilizing the status quo. And yeah, what we are concerned, obviously we want the peace to return as best as it was, recognizing that the Palestinian people have not lived with peace for decades and decades. But having said that, of course we support a ceasefire and so on. But what we are concerned about is that the way this resolution potentially can be implemented, it will stabilize the occupation, stabilize militarization, stabilize the undermining of international law, which Israel, more than any nation in the world, has consistently done. So the world, the eyes of the world are watching this. We don't think that people should read this resolution as fundamentally a good thing, because the devil is going to be in the detail about how it is implemented. And right now, since the so-called ceasefire, we don't take comfort about the fact that lives are being lost both in Gaza and also on the West Bank as we talk.
And as we talk about hunger, I want to move to Sudan in this last minute we have. If you can talk about the humanitarian catastrophe in Sudan and your continent of Africa.
So I think it's important to recognize the 12 million people, firstly, have been displaced. 12 million. Most countries in the world don't have 12 million population. Secondly, what has recently happened in Darfur? The numbers are not clear, but people are talking about bodies everywhere, absolute massacre.
Ravaging
through, We're talking about, people are talking about tens of thousands of people. I don't want to commit to that figure because there's a news blackout, but there is every reason to believe that that's happening. And let me just say, the global media has been pathetically complicit in the silence by just ignoring this. And that's why many people in Africa are now saying this is not just a problem with mainstream media, this is also a problem with white stream media, in the sense that black lives don't really seem to happen. If this was happening in North America or Europe, I mean, the whole world would be seeing saturation coverage. We need RSF and the previous army to comply to a negotiation process to stop this immediately. And the UN and the international community must raise the visibility and the energy in addressing this, because history will judge this as bad as we judged Rwanda at the end of the day.
I want to thank you, Kumi Naidoo, for being with us, South African human rights environmental justice activist, president of the Fossil Fuel Nonproliferation Treaty Initiative, former head of Greenpeace International, Amnesty International. Happy birthday to Ivan Incapié. Thank you to Tarina Nadura, Dennis Moynihan, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, and Sam Alkoff, who are here on the ground with us in Belém, Brazil, at the UN COP 30. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, kpft.org, and I'm Jacqueline. Really grateful for Democracy Now! Going to share some more from the programming from Democracy Now! Because they spent their week in Brazil and they covered a lot of ground. So grateful for that. And they're going to be bringing some of the indigenous voices. Next, we will hear the streets of Belém was occupied. According to the organizers of the Global Climate March, it was more than 70,000 people who showed up Saturday for this march on November 15 at the COP 30. So with many, many indigenous peoples from Brazil, but also from all over the world, leading that charge. Okay.
Broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, that's COP 30, from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. Leaders and delegates from more than 190 countries have entered a second week of negotiations. On Saturday, Democracy Now! Is in the streets of Belém as tens of thousands of protesters gathered demanding urgent climate action. The Great People's March was the first major climate protest at a UN climate summit since 2021. The three previous climate summits were hosted by nations that banned public actions, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Azerbaijan.
In the streets of Belém, where the UN Climate Summit is taking place, we're halfway through the negotiations of COP 30. It's a Saturday. Thousands of people have taken to the streets demanding urgent climate action. We spoke to several of them.
My name is Giovanni Del Prete. I'm from Brazil, from Sao Paulo. I'm here with all the people from more. We have here Gator more than 60 countries here. And we have Gator in UFPI and University, the Rio COP Summit here, the People Summit in the university here of the state of Pará. We have Gator there, 30,000 people that from 60 countries. Here we are denouncing all the false solutions in the COP 30. We are saying that the financial market was in the official COP 30, and the real people and the real solutions were here. We are here, seen here on the streets. So this is our message to the world. Against the war, against the imperialist invasion, we are seeing U.S. right now just launching a new military attempt against Venezuela, against Colombia, and this is what matters. There is no peace, there is no possibility of environmental solutions with war, with fossil fuels, and this is what we are here. Denouncing, and more than denouncing the problems, but also presenting proposals for life in the peoples, the peasants, the women movement. We have the diversity of all societies here. So this is what we are doing here. Fight for our life.
I am an Amazonian woman. I am an activist in the peasant women's movement. And we are here at the Global March in defense of life, in defense of our territories, and we will not negotiate our rights. Because there is no living territory if we are not alive. We will not negotiate our rights.
Okay, I am Lucia Ichu, a Maya Quiche woman from Guatemala. I'm part of the Amazon Flotilla and also Festivales Media in Guatemala. I'm staying in the march, supporting indigenous grassroots organizations in Brazil, but also defending and denouncing the ecocide in Guatemala and in the different parts of the continent. I'm also part of the Yakumama Flotilla. We traveled for more than 31 days for the Amazon River from Ecuador to Belén, and we see the ecocide there. So for us, it's very important to be here and stand together because we have to take action together for the environmental issue.
Why is that sense of solidarity so important, especially among indigenous leaders from across the region and around the world?
Well, one of the most important thing for me for this COP is the action and the solidarity that we are building together as an indigenous leaders and land defenders for different parts of the world. Because we know that the answer is us. We know that we are the lead alternatives. We have the answers and we have the response for all the devastation and the destruction for the climate crisis. And we are making this together. We know that we have the solutions.
My name is Delma Wellington Jovo. From Zimbabwe, a smallholder farmer, a peasant farmer from my country. I'm part of the international movement of La Via Campesina. We are here because as La Via Campesina, we are concerned of the false solutions that you are being given. We are concerned about the power that is still playing in the COP. We feel the power is not equal. People are, the corporate capture of the system has gone high. And so we have come to lend our voice to say, this is high time it should stop. People should look at the people first, not at money, not at anything, but just look at people and the farmers. We are the majority, even in any country. Therefore, we should be considered first. That's why we are here.
My name is Erinaldo Rodrigues, da aldeia de Miritituba, Baixo Tapajós.
My name is Erinaldo Rodrigues. I am the chief of the Miritituba village, and the message I want to tell the government is on this banner. It's for them to leave us, the Tapajós, in peace. They take away our food, the food of our children and grandchildren, and that is our territory. That is a sacred place where we must fight until the end of our lives, until we die. For that river, for the stones, for the rock formations, All of that serves as a symbol of our ancestors. That place is a legend to us. And I want to tell the government to look out for us, because stop harming us in our region, in our Amazon rainforest.
Our families are dying, our territories are dying, our orders are dying. In our country, we and the nature, we are the same thing. We are not separate. So our life, our spirituality, our mind, our feelings is totally connected to the rivers. We are the waters, people of the waters, fishmen and fishwomen. Our life is the river. Our life is the ocean. And the ocean and the ocean's animals have no voice. We are the voice of the water animals, and they are dying and crying, and no, that needs to stop and right now.
It's just really important to point out that there's a lot of focus in Amazon, in the forest, but there's also need to focus on the riverine communities, on the Quilombola communities, and also in the communities from other areas that are also guardians of our ecosystem, and ecosystems that are very important, like the fisher folk in the coast and the fisher folk in the mangroves. So this is the movement that represents them.
Tom Goldtooth from Minnesota, United States, Indigenous Environmental Network. We are a global international network of indigenous people. We're standing here with our relatives from the global south, from the Amazon, to speak with one mind and one voice and one heart. We're demanding that all these fossil fuel lobbyists be removed. It's very unethical and immoral that there's more there than the indigenous people here from the local region. We had indigenous people here who had to fight to get in. But we have these corporations that can just walk right in with no struggle. So we're declaring that the rights of indigenous people be recognized, and that there be climate action, real solutions. And we have that as indigenous people.
Denunciar toda la negociación capitalista sobre...
We are here to denounce the capitalist negotiations in the face of the climate crisis, which never manages to fulfill any agreements for controlling greenhouse gas emissions or establishing carbon sinks. Instead, it's pure capitalist business interests with no results. We must insist on mitigation and compensation, as well as adaptation. Climate justice is also necessary, and that implies compensation for the damage caused by the climate crisis inflicted by capitalism and global imperialism. And of course, solidarity with the people of Venezuela, who are being threatened with the use of force by a thug in a red tie and blue suit, but who only wants not freedom, not democracy, not humanitarian aid.
Con corbata roja y traje azul, pero que lo único que quiere no es libertad,
but to plunder the resources, not only of Venezuela, they want to enter the Amazon through Venezuela, and they're coming to seize all of Latin America.
Por Venezuela, pero vienen contra toda Latinoamérica.
Fight for climate justice!
Resist imperialism!
I'm Rachel Junsai. I'm from the Philippines, and I'm with the People's Rising for Climate Justice. We're marching with the people of Belém today to demand accountability from the world leaders as they attend COP30. As we can see, a lot of wars and occupations has been happening all over the world, from Palestine to Sudan to Congo and other regions, West Papua and even in Asia. And with that, the ongoing ecocide is something that we should not tolerate, something that we should not allow. And so we're here demanding for these world leaders, for these imperialist nations, to stop the U.S.-led wars, to stop their imperialist dominations over these countries, to stop the food blockades, and to stop violating the human rights of those people and the environment. Communities in the Philippines are devastated by flooding and corruption, and those are things that should have been talked about in the COP30, and yet we are seeing false solutions. We are seeing carbon markets that do not do justice to the people. Instead of putting the spotlight on the communities affected by the typhoons. It is the world leaders, it is the global North imperialist nation that are taking up space. That's why the movement is here, to get their space, to demand accountability, and to fight back against these world leaders who are dominating the space that should have been for the people and for the environment.
Why are we on these streets today? Can we answer that question, please? We are tired of false solutions. We are tired of corporate capture of the system. We are tired of being slaves in our own countries. I believe the power is in us to say no. As we stand together, let the COP know that we are concerned as peasants. Power to the people.
From the streets of Belém, this is Maria Ines Taracena with Democracy Now!
Voices from the streets of Belém here in Brazil at Saturday's major indigenous-led climate protest outside the UN Climate Summit where we are right now. Special thanks to Maria Taracena, Sam Alcoff, and Trina Nadurda. When we come back, we'll speak to the heads of Amazon Watch and Oxfam Brazil. Stay with us.
You're listening to People of Earth here on KPFT, 90.1 FM, kpft.org. I'm Jacqueline. I'm really grateful to be with you this evening on these free airwaves of KPFT Pacifica in Houston.
Indigenous protesters chanting during Saturday's march on COP 30 here in Belém. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. COP 30 comes 33 years after the Rio Earth Summit, which established the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC. Leaders and delegates from more than 190 countries have entered a second week of negotiations at the summit known as COP 30. That's Conference of Parties 30. We're joined now by two guests. Leila Salazar-Lopez is the executive director of Amazon Watch. She recently wrote an article headlined COP 30 at the Crossroads, Indigenous Sovereignty or Climate Collapse. And we're joined by Viviana Santiago, the executive director of Oxfam Brazil. Earlier this year, she joined the Lula administration as a member of the presidency council focused on sustainable development. Oxfam recently released a report titled Climate Plunder, How a Powerful Few Are Locking the World into Disaster, unquote. Oxfam also submitted a petition of over a million signatures to the Brazilian government demanding that the super rich pay for climate damages. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! It's quite something to be here at the gateway of the Amazon. Viviana, let's begin with you. For our global audience, can you set the stage? Where exactly are we? What is the significance of Belém? Why is the UN Climate Summit? Why did Lula, the president of Brazil, choose to put it in this gateway city?
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's really important to us to be here with you. And talk about the importance of being here in the Amazon region is talk about the vulnerability that you can see in this region. You can see how poverty affects people here, but also you can see how these people can answer the climate crisis. I think that the whole idea is about what we can have from this environment in terms of resistance, in terms of power connections with earth and nature, and how ancestrality plays an important role ensuring that we need to connect with our roots. But at the same time, we can see that these people that are fighting for survival, fighting for conservancy, are the most affected people in the world. And it's about climate crisis. And in some way, it's about to talk about climate justice. We need to understand that people that are most affected for the climate crisis are the people that did nothing to this crisis. So how can we act in terms to protect their lives and ensure that the rich polluters will pay for that?
So here we are at the mouth of the Amazon, right, in Belém. The Amazon, the lungs of the planet. Can you talk about the impacts of rising temperatures and deforestation?
Here in Brazil, and especially in this region, we can see this impact. We can see how the heat is affecting people's health, how it's almost impossible for some children go to school because school are not prepared for this heat, even here in this region. But at certain point, in some months here, the entire country can suffer the consequences. So what we are facing right now is a climate crisis here in Brazil that is affecting the entire country. What happens in Amazon affecting Brazil as a whole. So what we need to do right now is ensure that we will have conditions to adaptations and to mitigate the risk.
Leila Salazar Lopez, put Brazil in a regional context. The significance of this country when it comes to climate change. I mean, we just had Viviana saying the people who least cause climate change are most affected by it. And also respond to President Trump, a well-known and proud climate change denier. He campaigned on the slogan, drill, baby, drill. Not sending a high-level delegation to this climate summit. It's the first time in the COP's history.
Well, thank you, Amy, for having me in Democracy Now! Really, this is about democracy, right? You opened the segment with saying that we haven't had civil society at COPs in 3 years. And so that's what we're seeing here in Brazil. We're seeing
that because we're talking about more repressive governments that didn't allow public protest.
For the last 3 years, the COPs have been in Egypt, Dubai, and Azerbaijan. The civil society presence has been very, very limited. It's been inside. And the beauty of the Forest COP, the beauty of the People's COP in Brazil is that civil society is very active, both inside and outside. And as Viviana was saying, it's critical that what is happening here in the Amazon is at a tipping point. It's not coming, it's here. Why is that? I think we should talk about why the Amazon is at a tipping point, why the Amazon is literally burning. It's because of policy, it's because of industry, it's because of extraction, it's because of continued land grabbing, oil extraction, mineral extraction, land grabbing of indigenous people's lands. And that's why we see the mobilizations of indigenous and local communities saying, we want our land back. We want land demarcation. We want our rights just respected. We want mining off of our lands. We want the Amazon free of extraction. Literally, there is a protest happening right now by a mobilization of indigenous peoples leaving the indigenous village that has over 3,500 indigenous people staying there. And that's why we're saying that this is the indigenous COP. There are more indigenous peoples here in Belém than at any other COP in history. And that is significant because indigenous peoples are the guardians of the forest. They are protecting the forest. Riverine people, campesino people, quilombolas, they are protecting the forest from the threats, from the destruction. And they've made a very significant presence here at COP. And yes, there's the absence of the U.S. government as climate deniers, but the U.S. civil society is here too. We're here very strongly, and whether our federal government denies climate, we're here to also stand with the people and also demand that the Amazon be free of extraction and that we have, you know, there is no mention of fossil fuel extraction and the fact that it is the number one cause of global greenhouse gas emissions. So there's something missing there. When we have over 1,200 fossil fuel lobbyists here, that's more than some entire country delegations. So we need to come to reality here with the fact that we need to keep oil in the ground. We've been saying this for a long time since the Paris Agreement. We're a lot closer to hearing that here at COP30. And it is the indigenous people in the local communities who are making that known, that we want the Amazon free of extraction.
Yeah, that's all there is, folks, for People of Earth. Chichao Lu. Until next week, I'm Jacqueline. This has been People of Earth, and brought you Democracy Now! From the recent Conference of Parties 30.
Songwriter here in Houston, Texas. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
I'm going blind from the brake lights on this LA freeway tonight.
You are listening to KPFT Houston. I'm Michael Woodson, your producer and host of Living Art. We air on Wednesday night at 7. Tune in. Won't you join us for Art Talk?
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
We will control all that you see and hear.
This is Future Primitive, and you can hear us each and every late Saturday night, early Sunday morning on 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Want to vote in Texas but don't think you have the right ID? You can use a Texas driver's license as your voter ID even if it expired in the last 4 years. Or use a military ID or a current utility bill if you sign a declaration form at the polls. To learn more about voter ID options or for free help with your questions, call Vote Riders at 844-338-8743. That's 844-338-8743. Or go to voteriders.org. /Texas.
Ladies and gentlemen, how about a nice warm round of applause to welcome the world's greatest blues singer, the king of the blues, B.B. King!
Every day I have the blues. Every day. Every day I have the blues. When you see me wearing a woman, and it's you I hate to lose. Nobody loves me. Nobody seems to care. Yes, nobody loves me. Nobody seems to care. Speaking of words,